Hello, happy Wednesday. It is the 15th of December. So what's that? 9 days until Christmas Day. I hope I find you well. In a couple of moments, I'm going to be joined by the Ombudsman for Children, Dr. Niall Muldoon, on the 4,000 children with disabilities that are in waiting list limbo, it says here. Mick Barry is a TD for Cork North Central, and he is of the People Before Profit Solidarity Party. He is calling for the schools to be closed early. This is in the lead up to Christmas as a result of high COVID-19 transmission. And we know Professor of Immunology at DCU, Christine Loscher, was calling for this yesterday. Dr. Michelle Mine is Senior Inspector on the Drinking Water Team with the EPA. She's going to discuss the quality of the drinking water in County Kildare and nationwide, because it has been described as high quality in this county. Councillor Kevin Duffy of Kildare Newbridge will join us on the new sports, recreational and water hub facilities. They're to be built in Monasterevin. It was announced today. Richard Grogan, solicitor and partner at Grogan and Associate, joins me on carrying over of annual leave days into the new year. Many people may not know this about the specific dates that you have. So Richard will go into a little bit more detail with us. And we'll be speaking with the National Donor Services Manager of the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. They are needing 12,000 pints of blood prior to Christmas. They need to stockpile this. Many donors are ill at the moment, and also Storm Barra wreaked havoc with their clinics in recent weeks, the past 2 weeks. So a clinic is open in Athy today. It's at the Clannard Court. It's opening at 3:45. It's by appointment only, and it will also be open tomorrow. So Stephen will give us a bit more detail on that, obviously greatly and badly needed. And Pat Costello will join us. He is out and about in the county. I believe he's around Clane, Prosperous, Allen Wood area today. So do go and say hi to him if you see him in the OB unit. So to get in touch this afternoon, it's the Whitewater Shopping Centre text and WhatsApp line 0833 97 97 97. Now, you may have heard this earlier on in the day. There are 4,000 children with disabilities on waiting lists here in this country, and they're just on waiting lists for assessment of what they exactly need. It's very upsetting. We spoke to many parents who are carers themselves and have children with disabilities on both Kildare Today and Kildare Focus over the years. And joining me now is the Ombudsman for Children, Dr. Niall Muldoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
It is very upsetting when you see these numbers, and one may assume that this has something to do with COVID, but not necessarily, Dr. Muldoon.
Absolutely. It's very, very upsetting because, again, when you talk about 4,000 waiting, that's 4,000 children and their parents and their siblings who are all upset by this long waiting list. And it hasn't just happened over COVID. We wrote a report last year on unmet needs, which talked about a waiting list of 6,000 at that stage. And that was we started that in early 2019. And we've been having concerning complaints about that since about 2010 onwards. So it's been there a long time. The HSE have made efforts. They invested money last year. They redirected, they increased the number of therapists. And they also changed the style of assessment they do. And they have brought down the numbers for a period of time. The 6,000 that were backlogged were worked on. But we still have a large number. 4,000 is way too many. And there is a statutory obligation on the HSE to provide these assessments within 6 months. But the average waiting time at the moment is 17 months. And we highlighted a case of a young boy called Callum, who's 6 years old, who's been waiting for 4 years. So again, if you look at what he should be getting after 6 months, so if he applied at 2 years of age, at 2.5, he should be inside getting his services, whether it's occupational therapy, physio, speech and language, psychology, whatever it might be. He would have 2.5, 3 years of active engagement with those services now if things have been working as they should be. So we're calling on the HSE to explain what the situation is now.
Just to reference County Kildare, Dr. Muldoon, there were 3 mothers of children with spina bifida. They joined us on our morning show, Kildare Today, on the 3rd of December, so just at the beginning of the month. And there's 82 children in the Republic of Ireland. They're currently waiting for vital orthopaedic surgery. Now, it's not exactly what you're speaking about, but there are so many families in this country so greatly affected due to these waiting lists. And does this mean the waiting list that was there was probably a backlog prior to a pandemic, meaning in the next couple of years, this waiting list will probably get even worse for these children and families?
That would be our unfortunate concern, that would be the case. But again, it's about planning ahead. It's about ensuring the resources are in place so that when the opportunity comes to catch up, that they do it very, very quickly and that children are prioritised. You know, it's May of this year is the first time that we actually got child-specific waiting lists coming out of the Department of Health. We fought for that for a number of years. So at least now we have some sense of the numbers, which in turn means that they have an onus and an obligation to work on those numbers and reduce those numbers in all areas of waiting for children in health.
Niall, what's top of your list to ask the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid, if he does come before the Oireachtas?
Well, in relation to this one, in relation to assessment of need, again, it's a statutory obligation, and it's the key to the door to get services. So it's only the starting point. But if you're delayed in the starting point, and then you have another waiting list once you get in to get the services, you really are putting so many children at a huge disadvantage at the earliest stage in their life. And so we're investing a lot of money in catching up as opposed to early intervention and making things happen as quickly as possible. So again, like that young person, Callum, if he'd had 3.5 years of services by now, he may not need any services into the future. So I'd be asking the HSE and whoever comes in front of the Oireachtas Committee to explain their plans to make sure that these services and this assessment is done as quickly as possible and children get access to the services, because that's what it's about. It's just mm-hmm. opening the door to get into the services as quickly as possible.
And it may sound cold-hearted to say it like this, but obviously, you know, finance is always probably one of the top things government is thinking at all times. But by leaving waiting lists like this, it does mean that children will be in the system for longer. And as you're mentioning, if the assessments were carried out earlier, these children would need the specific services maybe for just a period of time. Whereas if you leave the waiting list for too long and the children not being assessed, they may need long-term services that they wouldn't have needed if it had been done that little bit earlier, meaning the country could actually be saving money. I know that sounds cold-hearted in that way, but that will be the argument at times from government and political parties.
It's a very clear, I think it's very conservative to say that you save €3 for every €1 you spend early in these services. And again, the Mike Ryan, who people would know well from the Assistant Director of WHO, has said that our problem around the world is that governments see health as an expenditure as opposed to an investment. It's an investment in our people and in our society, and it's an investment in our future. And that's what we need to see it as. We need to invest now early and quickly so that the shortest possible intervention is needed for every single child. You know, the longer you leave it, the harder it is for them to catch up with their language, to catch up with their walking, to catch up with their intellectual challenges, whatever it might be. So you're right. I mean, we need to recognise this as an investment that may cost a lot now for 10 years, but will pay back in spades for many, many years into the future.
Okay, well, Dr. Niall Muldoon, Ombudsman for Children, thank you for joining me. And I think we're going to hear a lot more about different waiting lists in regards to so many things. I know last week we were talking about orthodontry and people on waiting lists in this county and throughout the country, and children in particular. And it seems as if children's waiting lists have just increased. Now, just to let you know, in terms of the text line, as I was saying earlier, it's 0833 97 97 97. And that is, of course, in association with Whitewater Shopping Centre. But somebody has been in touch saying that Micheál Martin said last night no new restrictions were asked for by Tony Holohan. And then today, Leo Varadkar has come out this morning and says, and this can you in the media not see you're being played? So that's Joe saying that. So basically how there's basically completely different communication coming from two of the leaders of the government. Yesterday, Micheál Martin said that Tony Holohan had not discussed that we need to have further COVID-19 restrictions during their meeting with the three government leaders. And obviously this morning, Leo Varadkar said he expects there to be new restrictions announced tomorrow. Do let me know how you're feeling about that one. I don't think anybody, unfortunately, is expecting anywhere near the Christmas that they thought they'd have maybe 12 months ago. But this is life. And this is life in a pandemic, I guess. Now, speaking of this pandemic, we know that there have been immunologists calling for children to finish up for Christmas this Friday, which is the 17th of December. I know schools, a lot of them are scheduled to finish up next Wednesday. Mick Barry joins me now, People for Profit TD for Cork North Central. Hi, Mick. How are you? Mick, you should be on the line there now.
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
I can, perfect. Mick, you're calling for the schools to be closed early, you alongside immunologists such as Dr. Christine Loscher.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. School children are going to be let out on Friday and then the gates opened up again next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think the gates should stay closed on the Monday. I mean, obviously, the Omicron variant is going to be quite rampant later in this week. It's gone from 1% to 14% in a week. It'll probably be the majority variant by next week. And how many hundreds, how many thousands of young people in school are likely to contract that on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before going home for Christmas and spending Christmas with not just parents, but with grandparents as well. So I think the idea of circuit breaker, there's going to be a circuit breaker with school holidays, but making it that bit longer, that bit more of a buffer, I think makes sense.
Now, there's two sides of this discussion. Some people will say children of that age have missed enough time of school, and it's a vital time, obviously, to be in education, etc. And then there's the other side, and people will say not much is done in the last 3 days prior to Christmas.
Well, okay, you can make the argument there, but I think you do want to minimise the amount of time missed in school. No question about that. But the question that I would pose is this, is that if you don't take the step of closing the schools next Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, how much more likely are you to be in a situation where you're unable to reopen the schools in January? There's no doubt that closing the schools next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday will present difficulties for parents, particularly where both parents or all the parents in the household are working, no question about that. So I don't make the call lightly. But it would be far more pressure on those parents if schools are unable to reopen in January. And I'm not saying for a moment that closing the schools next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is a silver bullet which will allow the schools to be reopened in the new year, but I think it increases your chances by more than a little bit, actually.
Okay, you take those 3 days. Obviously, that would be 3 days that those children wouldn't be mixing. We know a huge majority of the cases over the past 2 months since October have been of COVID-19. That is, have been of primary school age children, between 5 and 11. We know now that the European Medicines Agency and NIAC here in this country have advised for children that age to receive a third of a dose of the adult dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine or the other mRNA vaccine, Moderna. Now, so children will be, if their parents decide for them to be vaccinated, within the next few months. And we do know that, you know, we're speaking about these 3 days in particular. And I think some people's argument, as well as what I was saying, the two sides of the discussion a few minutes ago, is that, yes, you could, you know, not go to school for those 3 days. But does that mean that those families won't be socialising elsewhere?
I think
I know you can't answer that question for every single family in this country, but the likelihood is people are still going to socialise whether their kids are in school or not.
I think that there will obviously be some families who engage in a fair amount of social mixing, some who will engage in very little, and some who will engage in none at all, right? I do think that you're more likely to minimise the spread of infection if the school children are involved in that scenario than if they're involved in, you know, everybody gathering in the school and in the classrooms. Okay, I'm not for one moment saying that taking this step is a guarantee against the spread of what seems to be a very transmissible variant of the virus.
Yeah,
but I do
yeah.
think you have a better chance if
yeah.
you take that. And I also would wonder that if the state don't take a position of closing the schools Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, how many parents will choose to keep their children at home in any case?
Mm-hmm.
I think the indications are that the level of that could be significant enough.
Yeah, no, I think your point is fair. I just think it seems when we're talking about this debate in general, and we've got some texts here coming in, that a lot of people do have their guard down when they're in, I guess, social environments, and school is not a social environment. Obviously you do socialise in school, but that's not what it's the main use or service of it is, not to socialise. So when these children are in the classroom, they're in their pods, you know, there is ventilation to some degree. I know there's a lot of discussion about the HEPA filters and the fact that children are freezing in the schools because the windows are open, etc., etc. But there's more restrictions on their movement. Whereas for those 3 days, one person has texted in here, Mag, saying those kids, this is just an opinion, obviously, Mick, will be dragged around shops, etc., if they're not in school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that will happen in some cases. I'm not, you know, naive in any sense in that regard. However, I think if the message comes from the government and from NPHET, if it were to come, that this is a serious situation we're facing now, and one of the restrictions that are being put in place is to close the school for 3 days, that in itself sends out a message to a lot of people. That, you know, this is serious and we need to be careful here. And while no doubt there would be, you know, some parents, as you say, dragging kids around shops for the 3 days, I'm not sure if that would be the majority. I think the majority would say, we're getting the message here to be cautious, and who would practice caution as a result of that. I mean, who knows for sure, mm-hmm. you know? But
yeah,
that would
yeah.
be my sense. That would be my sense of it. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's an interesting thing to discuss, Mick, because people have so many difference of opinion on it, and it's one of those things you can see from so many sides. That's the difficulty with a pandemic and not knowing the path of this virus and where
one thing
we'll
I do know
next.
For certain mm-hmm. is that over the course of the last 20 or so months, we've had problems on more than one occasion with governments failing to take bold, decisive action and taking half measures.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have to detail all the examples of that. They're well known to you and they're well known to your listeners, I'm sure, right? And I think we don't want dilly-dallying around this. Omicron, certainly in terms of its transmissibility, does seem to be a real challenge. It's gaining ground very quickly. And I think, you know, some bold measures, including measures which send a message to society about we need to take this very seriously. And I think one of them could and should be closing the schools for okay. the 3 days. I totally accept that there's arguments for and against, but on balance, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, no, we hear you loud and clear. Mick Barry, People Before Profit, Solidarity TD for Cork North Central. Thank you for joining me. And Mick, I think I can say Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Kara.
Text line is 0833 97 97 97 for WhatsApp. And we have a texter in here. I don't have your name, unfortunately, texter, but thank you for getting in touch. They're talking about COVID and they're saying it's been spread again by anywhere indoors where alcohol is involved, pubs, restaurants and homes. This is in regards to my interview just before the break with Mick Barry, the TD for Cork North Central. He's calling for the schools to be closed alongside the immunologist Christine Loscher on Friday instead of waiting until next Wednesday, using it as a circuit break of sorts. And that's exactly what this texter is saying. This is what happened the last time. It's a well-known fact that people behave differently when they have been drinking. That's the truth of it. And I'm reading an article here just during the break, really interesting, on The Examiner. So Dr. Mary Favier, or Favier, whichever way it's pronounced, and Dr. Dennis McCauley said that in regards to the booster campaign, axing the 15-minute post-vaccine wait could double the number of COVID boosters given by GPs. Now, I don't know how people feel about this, because obviously there's a reason why there's a 15-minute wait. And how would that, I guess, you know, help in wait times? Because wouldn't they just wait in the waiting room? It's not like they have to wait with the doctor for those 15 minutes. Maybe I'm wrong. I didn't receive a vaccine myself in a doctor's surgery, so I don't know about that. Do let me know what you think about that. Could that help us? And I'd like to understand that a bit more, if and how it could help us. Now, moving on to something very different. It is water. Joining me now is Dr. Michelle Minahan. She's the Senior Inspector on the Drinking Water Team with the EPA. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Kira. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's actually good news for County Kildare, Michelle, because we have a high quality public drinking water here.
Yeah, it is. And Kira, thanks for having me on to talk about our 2020 report on the quality of drinking water in our public water supplies. The EPA is reporting today that across the board, 99% of samples were complied with the standards for both chemical and bacterial standards. So that's really good news. It means our water is safe to drink.
Now, can I just ask you one thing on that? The 99.5% of the samples, which is, you know, great news for anybody. But supposedly over 15,000 people in this country were on boil water notices for longer than a month in the past year. I'm assuming that that's not good news.
That's not good news. You're absolutely right. There was 43 boil water notices issued during 2020. And of those 27 boil water notices, like 2/3 of them were in place for longer than a month. So those 15,500 people had to boil their water for longer than 1 month. And that's what we'd call a long-term boil water notice. Now, obviously, people will know a boil water notice, if it's issued, it's really important that you follow the instructions and boil your water and allow it to cool before drinking it, because that's what makes it safe to drink. But I suppose the fact that the boil water notices were in place for longer than 1 month points to a vulnerability within our water supplies, and that's what we're highlighting in our public supplies report today. Some of our supplies, while they might be producing safe water today, they're vulnerable and prone to risks into the future, and that might mean that we have further boil water notices. So we're calling on Irish Water to progress the 46 vulnerable supplies that remained on our remedial action list at the end of 2020, and to ensure that any of those supplies, that there's no further delay to the completion of upgrade works at any of those supplies, and that'll allow for a safe and secure supply of drinking water for those supplies. And, you know, just to give you one example, leak slip was on that list at the end of 2020, and your listeners will be aware of the boil water notices and leak slip there in October and November 2019. Since the end of 2020, Irish Water has really progressed upgrades there to the filtration system. They've installed UV treatment there, and that meant that the leak slip supply was removed from the remedial action list by the EPA in July of 2021. So that's really a good news story and highlights how prioritising supplies by identifying them through our remedial action list can result in a positive outcome for consumers.
Now, I think people may be surprised by this one, Michelle. 58 water treatment plants were built or upgraded in 2020. And if we look at this county since 2014, Irish Water, as the EPA have noted in this report, have been working in partnership with Kildare County Council to address the water quality issues across the country and across the county, I should say. And it has built new drinking water infrastructure in towns and villages across this country. And 58, as I just mentioned, across the whole of Ireland.
Yeah, so people will be aware that, for example, just last month, a brand new water treatment plant was opened in Vartry in the neighbouring county in Wicklow. That's a brand new plant replacing a plant that was 150 years old. So that's really positive. You rightly mentioned that upgrades were carried out at a number of plants as well in the last years. That in 2020, and Irish Water has reported those today, and I suppose that's really positive. But what we're seeing is that we still have a number of supplies where works will continue out beyond 2024, so into 2026. And for example, a number of supplies on our remedial action list, of those 46 supplies that I mentioned earlier, over half of those will now take longer for Irish Water to complete than they had forecast at the end of 2019. So they're delayed in delivering those upgrades and those infrastructural improvements. And that means that for as long as they're delayed, there will be risks to the supply. Those supplies will remain vulnerable. And I suppose we're asking Irish Water to progress without further delay the upgrades to those water treatment plants.
Now, just to remind our listeners that €450 million has been invested by Irish Water in water projects across this country. And it's quite unbelievable when you do read the EPA report that over 100,000 people removed from at-risk supplies in 2020. It's continued the work throughout 2021. Additional 6 supplies removed so far this year, and that has benefited over 660,000 people. So if you do want some more information on this report, it is of course on the EPA website, and we will link that on our own website, kfmradio.com. Dr. Michelle Minahan, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Senior Inspector on the Drinking Water Team with the EPA. Take care of yourself, and Merry Christmas. I feel like I'm saying that to everybody now. Joining me now is Councillor Kevin Duffy of Fine Gael, and he is a councillor for the Kildare Newbridge MD. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Afternoon, Ciara.
Merry Christmas to you too.
And you too.
It's madness. I can't believe we're saying this.
It's getting close.
Yeah, it's really weird. I have to say, I'm not feeling like it's real this year. I don't know why. But you have good news for us, a little Christmas gift, I guess you could say. So there's a new sports, recreational and water hub facilities. They're going to be built in Monastereven. It was announced today.
Yeah, at our municipal district today, we're at the given update that, like many towns and villages, one of the key lacking infrastructure is social infrastructure, with community services and pitches and playing areas and, you know, skate parks is often one that we struggle with lots of development that is happening. And I suppose Monastereven and the wider area would be no different than lots of communities across the county. Very strong community group here and voluntary community-based organisations, but a lack of physical infrastructures. And just to give you a snippet of it, in Monastereven area, you know, we have a wonderful tennis club, but we actually have no physical infrastructure. Again, actually one of the only Irish men to win Wimbledon was a Monastereven native.
No way!
Back in the early, late 1800s.
That is so cool.
What's
the name?
A little bit of trivia. George Willoughby.
Oh, yes, okay.
So he was a Monastereven native, with no tennis club here in Monastereven. So, again, you know, just shows a little trivia of what we're missing out on. And same, we have a wonderful basketball players here in Monastereven, two young girls here in Monastereven who were on the Ireland basketball team, but yet no basketball club, limited soccer facilities, and another recreational facility. So, I suppose, you know, what we've been doing over the last 2 years, a local group got together off the back of a health check that Kildare County Council had done, highlighting some of these deficiencies, and we set up the Monastereven Development Association, and really building on work that had probably had started 20 years ago, Ciara, looking at the need for these types of facilities, not just for Monastereven, but the wider region.
And Kevin, it's quite clearly very important to yourself, who was one of the founders of the Monastereven Development Association, and Deirdre Ryan, that sports and physical activity is top of the priority list, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be an equaliser in lots of ways and give lots of opportunity. And you know, just even recreational amenities for, you know, we've realised through COVID how important these types of facilities are in our local area, so that people can get out and stay active, whether that's walking or, you know, cycling or skate parks or, you know, more team sports, and are all crucially critical. So I suppose with the setup of the MDA and this community-led project, with the guidance of Kildare County Council and the support, we really worked on over the last 2 years. Key to this was obviously securing land to be able to build these types of facilities. And we're great to announce today that, you know, late in November, Kildare County Council and the Monastereven Development Association signed two memorandums of understanding with two key partners. One of them was with Waterways Ireland, which will secure a site that is adjacent to the canal and the Barrow River here in Monastereven, which will provide a water hub. And so this water hub will be located adjacent to the Barrow Blueway, which obviously is a huge government initiative. So it'll support and link in there, but it'll provide critical facilities in that kind of area of water.
So Kevin, just exactly explain what the water hub will be.
So I guess simplistically, it'll be a set of facilities that will provide, you know, storage and toilets and showers and things like that for people who want to go down and access the water, whether that might be kayaking or canoeing or paddleboarding, and also kind of nature walks and things like that along the river and the canals, and provide some critical infrastructure to allow them activities to occur. So we signed that MOU with Waterways Ireland, which will give us that piece of land to develop that infrastructure. And then similarly with the Sisters of Charity of Jesus and Mary, who are the owners and trustees of what we know locally here as Moore Abbey and the Moore Abbey Domain. We're very fortunate as part of discussions with them to, you know, for them and their legacy within the town to secure land within the Moore Abbey Domain. It's about all up. About 14 acres set aside for sports, recreational and amenity. And as part of that proposal, it'll secure land for a couple of things. One will be the expansion of the cemetery here in Monastereven for future-proofing for hopefully decades to come. And the second is the securing of 9 acres of that land for sports and recreation. So that, I suppose, what does that mean? It means it'll provide a home for tennis and soccer and walkways, skate parks, astroturfs, a whole bunch of range of facilities.
That, it's all good news for you guys over in Monastereffin.
Yeah, and I suppose, Kira, you know, we're very fortunate that we've been able to secure this land and in the region. But I suppose key message for me would be that, you know, wonderful for the town here, but I hope that these will develop into regional facilities so that they'll benefit all the people of South Kildare in this area. So, yeah, very positive news, and it's a great outcome for Kildare County Council.
Well, yeah, great news for the area. Fine Gael councillor Kevin Duffy of the Kildare Newbridge MD there speaking about the new sports, recreational and water hub facilities that are going to be built in Monastereffin. It was confirmed today at the Kildare Newbridge MD meeting, and I'm sure Kevin will be speaking to you later on in the week. Take care.
Thank you, Kira.
Now, I am moving on to something a bit different from water facilities. It is annual leave entitlements. And joining me to discuss the issue is Richard Grogan. He's a solicitor and partner at Grogan & Associates and, of course, an employment law expert. But in particular, Richard, this afternoon we're going to be speaking about the carrying over of annual leave days into the new year, no matter what new year that is. So first, I guess, Richard, what I'd ask is, what exactly, time-wise, are people playing with there, if you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, this has been coming up quite a lot recently. And the issue on it is, people think that the annual leave year finishes on the 31st of December, and it doesn't. It finishes on the 31st of March. It's the statutory leave year set in legislation is the 1st of April to the 31st of March. And despite what employers might say, they can't change that. It's absolutely set in stone. And confirmed by the High Court back in about 1984.
Okay, Richard, would say if your employer, you know, it makes it very clear to you that it's essential that all annual leave needs to be taken within the 12-month period, as in January to December window. How does one go about dealing with that and, I guess, negotiating?
No, it's very simple. The holiday year in the legislation is 1st of April to the 31st of March. They can turn around and say they have to take it between the 1st of April and the 31st of December, but they have to set the rules out and they have to comply with the working time legislation. So if an employer now said it today, you have to take your, you know, you have to take 5 days holidays between now and we're reopening in January, they're too late. They have to give you a month's notice. So it can't be done.
Okay, Richard, just to go into a little bit more detail in regards to annual leave, because I think people do have a difficult time of kind of adding it up, what they're entitled to in terms of holiday pay, etc. Just explain that a little for us.
Right. The statutory holidays are 20 days, 4 weeks. So that's what it is. And your holiday pay is your average pay in the 13 weeks before you go on holiday. So if you earned commission, the commission has to be taken into account in setting your holiday pay. So let's say you're earning €500 a week and you make €100 in commission a week. Then when you're going on holidays, your salary is worked, your wage is worked on the basis of €600 a week, not €500. The commission has to be taken into account.
And Richard, in terms of those who are working part-time?
The same thing applies. I mean, the full 4 weeks, you'd part-time, if you're doing 25 hours a week, then you get the full 4 weeks. It's 1,365 hours in a year that you have to work to get the full thing. That's a little over 25 hours a week. So a lot of part-time workers would be fully entitled to the full 4 weeks entitlement.
Okay, and yourself, with your practice, are you noticing a lot more people coming forward with this issue about carrying annual leave days over into the new year?
Well, we've been... Since 2009, when this firm opened up, we've been doing claims under the Organisational Working Time Act. And I got so fed up of it, I decided to try and say, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make it very clear so that this is what the rights are. And hopefully we'll stop this codology going on that people are getting it wrong. And, you know, employers really have to get it right. It's very easy to get it right. You get it wrong and you're down in the WRC. And it's not just paying up the unpaid holidays. It's compensation on top. And, you know, it's not fun.
Okay,
so
well,
people need to get their act in order, and that's why I'm putting out the information so that we don't have these claims, because nobody needs to have these claims.
And Richard, you are putting out the information. You're doing so in some different ways, I guess, than most solicitors would, because you're on TikTok now.
Yes, I opened up TikTok It'll be 2 weeks ago. It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow back. So it's only up for 2 weeks. I think I've got about 60,000 followers at this stage. So, yeah, we're trying to do, you know, it's not bad for an old fella. You know.
I think it's very cool. This is where I have to admit, this is actually where I found out this information for the first time in my life about the annual leave was through TikTok. So TikTok can be educational. You're not just wasting your time on it.
Well, like your show is providing a lot of very useful information to people. Look, this is basic stuff. And unfortunately, it's not been got out there. This is stuff that the WRC should be actually getting out in very simple language and communication so that people can see that information. Because we're employment law solicitors. We're not there. You know, we shouldn't be having these kind of claims coming into us that people didn't get their holidays or that they weren't allowed to carry over the holidays. This is stuff that is so
basic. It's
so basic. It's a bit like putting on a seatbelt when you get into the car.
Yeah, and I guess it's clogging up our court system, which obviously already is clogged up prior to the pandemic. And with the pandemic, we know what the situation was in terms of that. So, yeah, it seems like let's get the basics right, iron out those. Listen, thank you so much, Richard Grogan. You've had great time for us throughout the past 12 months. And I have explained many, many legal things to myself and to others here at KFM. So thank you. And of course, we wish you all the best for Christmas and the new year.
And we wish you and your listeners a very safe Christmas this year. I'm not saying happy. I'm saying safe.
Yes.
Keep safe.
Yes, happy and safe. Hopefully we'll get both.
Hopefully. Take care.
Thank you very much, Richard Grogan, solicitor and partner at Grogan & Associates. Now, we have been running this news since yesterday, but the Irish Blood Transfusion Service is under pressure. They're urging members of the public to donate blood. 12,000 pints of blood is needed to stockpile before Christmas. Joining me now is the National Donor Services Manager with IBTS, that's Stephen Cousins. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
So a huge amount of blood needs to be stockpiled, obviously, says you probably and others, but 12,000 pints at the moment, would you have any idea how much the IBTS would have stockpiled?
We probably have under 2,000 units at the moment. So
literally 10,000 within 9 days.
Yeah, 9 to 10. Yeah, just kind of over the next week and then into Christmas as well. And it really depends on demand. Demand has been quite... It stayed very constant throughout most of the pandemic, and even as we hear now that, you know, the hospitals are obviously under a lot of pressure with COVID, they're still taking blood in and still trying to get through surgeries. As long as there's demand, we have to get the donors in to make sure we meet it.
Yeah, now Barry Doyle, who's the acting operations director of IBTS, did say that on any given day, 200 patients receive transfusions in Irish hospitals, and the demand for blood, even over Christmas, is constant. We rely on our donors, and they're urging them to give a priceless gift this Christmas, obviously the gift of life, because many of your usual donors, I guess you'd call them, are actually ill at the moment.
Yeah, it's been a real, real challenge for us. Not only are the hospitals busy, but the donors that we rely on, and you know, we're very fortunate in Ireland to have such reliable donors through thick and thin, really. But there's so much sickness out there. It is really impacting on donors, and it's not just obviously donors being sick. You know, if they're close contacts, they obviously can't come into clinics.
Yes, yes.
But even if they've, you know, any kind of symptoms whatsoever, so it might be COVID, but even colds and all that kind of stuff, they can't give blood in those circumstances as well. So it's really, really impacted on our ability to ask donors to come into the clinic. And it actually impacts even on our staff as well. Obviously, it's quite difficult to maintain staffing levels as the level we want to do as well, because, you know, our staff are the same part of the community and they experience the same problems. So all in all, it's been a lot of challenges coming at the one time. And it is making life quite difficult at the moment.
Now, one of the things that the services have noted is there's a particular need for people with O negative, B negative and A negative blood. Is that common that those three blood types would be the lowest in terms of what's stockpiled?
It is. We actually were going pretty well on the all the recent negative groups, but we have seen them drop again quite substantially. Now, part of that is that, people might know about O neg, it's the universal blood group, so that can be used for any patient.
Okay.
But there's actually the recent negative groups like B neg as well. There's certain illnesses where O neg and B neg in particular are of importance, so the likes of sickle cell disease. And that's because that's a disease that's very much on the up, and we require an awful lot more O neg and B neg to help those patients and make sure those patients are transfused. So there's this ongoing pressure across all those blood groups. So I think in Ireland, if you think O neg is 8% of the population, but we collect probably about 14-15% of all that we collect in any given year is O neg. So there's a big requirement to get O neg donors in particular in, but B neg would be something similar as well.
Now, to let our listeners Stephen.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to let our listeners know that there's a clinic open in Athy today at the Clannard Court Hotel in the town, and also tomorrow. That clinic will be running from 3:45, I believe, until 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. I'll just
8 p.m. Yeah.
8 p.m. Yes, thank you so much. So just to let any listeners here in Kildare know, if you're not somebody who gives blood often or you want to start giving blood, it will be in the south of the county, as I said, at the Clannard Court Hotel in Athy from 3:45 this afternoon. But the clinic operates on appointment basis only. Now, further information can be found on giveblood.ie. And it's great to head over to the website, Stephen, because it does give you the details of when exactly you can donate. It has a little questionnaire. It only takes a few minutes, because there are some small things that obviously, for certain reasons, people may not be able to donate that they may not know off the top of their head.
That's right. And yeah, so if people take that quick quiz, particularly people who've obviously never given blood before, they wouldn't really be aware of the various reasons that we would ask people not to attend clinics. So it's well worth taking that quiz. It covers about, you know, kind of 90% of the reasons why you mightn't be able to give blood. And it's a very quick 2-minute quiz. We certainly ask new donors to look at that quiz. Regular donors probably have a fair idea what they can and can't do. But even then, when donors are to ring in, they'll see it on the website, but the number 1-800-222-111. And when donors ring in, we actually do a little bit of pre-screening, even when we're making the appointment as well, particularly around COVID and symptoms and that kind of stuff, to make sure everyone's safe.
Stephen, just before you go, obviously you need 12,000 pints of blood stockpiled before Christmas. You're saying you've around 2,000 at the moment. Have you ever had that much of a gap between what's needed and what's currently in place?
Maybe not so much coming up to Christmas. We've had it at different times over the year, but COVID has put so many challenges that it is probably a little bit unique.
Okay.
I think, you know, it kind of, part of it as well is that when we have that supply here, we will then use that over Christmas. We do have the clinics over Christmas as well. And in fact, the Kildare region is vitally important to us actually over Christmas, because we have clinics in Kildare town on the 29th and the 30th. We're also in Naas for 3 days from the 28th, 29th and 30th. And then we're back in Newbridge the first week in January as well. So that's a lot of clinics around Kildare. So we're very reliant on the people of Kildare to help us get through Christmas and the New Year.
Yeah, I'm going to just go through those again. So the Clannard Court today from 3:45 this afternoon has to be appointment. Tomorrow, the 16th, Clannard Court Hotel in Athy, 3:45 until 8 p.m. both of those days. And as Stephen was saying, there's also donation clinics open on the 28th of December in Naas, the 29th of December in Kildare Town and Naas, and the 30th of December in Kildare Town and Naas, and obviously that continues into January and the new year in general. Listen, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon, Stephen Cousins, the National Donor Service Manager with the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, and Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for joining me. Now we are going to join Pat Costello, who I believe is in Strafford at the moment. Hello.
Hello, Kira. How are you? Are you good?
I'm good today. How are you?
You can hear me?
I can hear you.
That's
a little bit of a delay, but we'll survive.
I thought you had left me already. Yes, we have been out and about. We were buoyed by the great Christmas music that was supplied to us by Scoil Fothrick, Miss Collins' class there earlier. So we took a little trip. We headed out through Prosperous, past Dowlings of Prosperous, where Chrissy Moore would have played all those years, and probably cut his teeth, and many others as well. Then into Allenwood, and the cheapest place for diesel in Allenwood at the moment, 159.9, so well done to them. And we could all fit up there. And we obviously had a trip out to Allenwood GA, where we found out how Johnny Doyle is keeping so young. So lots of things that we decided then to head back into Strafford. Of course, Strafford was the scene of the Ryder Cup back in the early 2000s. So it's a beautiful afternoon. Just listening into what you had to say there with Councillor Kevin, I've missed his second name.
Duffy,
He was talking about, he was talking about the tennis player Willoughby from
George Willoughby,
Did you know that, did you know that his nickname was The Ghost?
I didn't.
He was called The Ghost. Yeah, well, there you go. I remember checking that up years and years ago when I was out in my first outside broadcast. They didn't know whether it was because of his pale skin or the way he ghosted around the court. But anyway, he was nicknamed the Ghost, and he did come from...
Monastrevin, interesting.
Monastrevin. And another famous person, yeah, another famous person. You mentioned the basketball player. Claire Melia is the basketball player. She is from Monastrevin, plays for the Irish team. Used to play with Portlaoise Panthers. Now she plays with Glenmire. And unfortunately, she lost her mother in an accident earlier this year, so Claire, we're all thinking of you at this time, and hopefully you will be okay. But she's been an outstanding player for Ireland during the past 6 months, or the past 6 years really, because she's been doing so well. Anyway, where are we? We're Strafford at the moment. Now we're going to head back right back into Tullane, and we'll see what's happening in Tullane. We talk to you from the Choice car park, and indeed from Main Street, because we're out and about, day 16 of our Shop Local. That's what it's all about.
Well, thank you very much, Pat. And of course, you will be joining Ben in the next few minutes over on K-Drive Gold. And just to get to some of our texts, Dick Maher has been in touch. He said, "Hi, Ciara. Hi, Dick." He asked me how I am. "I'm well. Thank you. Hope you're well. You're very nice." After listening to Mick Barry, I'd say you would want to take what all the opposition parties say with a pinch of salt, as responsible on us all to get rid of this virus, never mind trying to get short-term political points. So Dick obviously has his opinion there in terms of the opposition parties to government. And I was mentioning that they're speaking about some people in regards to the GP, or the Irish Medical Organisation GP committee, that they're looking at axing the 15-minute post-vaccine wait, and they're saying this could double numbers of COVID boosters given by GPs. Now, I don't fully understand how this could happen, because you still obviously have to wait in terms of you know, you're not going to be sitting beside the doctor for those 15 minutes. So I don't understand why other people couldn't be vaccinated within, you know, the quicker time period. I don't really fully understand it, but yes, this is what they're saying at the moment. And a texter has been in touch on our Whitewater shopping line saying, "Hi, Ciara, re-GPs vaccinating. If people have to wait the recommended 15 minutes after their booster vaccine, it slows everything," they said. "They have to wait on the waiting room after they come out of the doctor's office, and most surgeries have a limited capacity. Therefore, if capacity is reached, turnover will be reduced." So that is a very good point that I didn't think of at all. Obviously, the amount of people in with the pandemic, etc., etc. Anyway, listen, thank you all so much for joining me this afternoon.